the whole concept of evil creates so many problems just in thinking about and discussing, because we are faced with almost two different systems and viewpoints around the problem of evil. First of all, when we're talking about it, are we talking about even the same general concepts? Or do we have this kind of absolute relativism morally? Well, you know, you call it evil, but some societies would call it good, and we have to understand other times and other cultures. And so when we say something's evil, does it just mean I don't like it or I don't like it today? I'm not answering that question. But that's one of the places where the conversation starts and where the confusion starts. Must we know what we're talking about when we talk about the problem of evil? It gives as much difficulty to Orthodox religious as it does to hardcore humanists, because it seems to speak of absolutism. It seems to speak of ideas and actions that are somehow eternally right or eternally wrong. And as soon as we get into those, off come the cultural and relativistic gloves, and also off come the theological gloves, and we start getting into these questions of moral relativism and moral absolutism. I went to a panel discussion of learned rabbinic scholars on the question of evil about 6 weeks ago, and incidentally they were all against it, so at least this much was unanimous. And what was surprising, however, even within a religious, and I mean Orthodox now, not in terms of the brand name of the denomination, but in terms of serious religious viewpoint, was that I couldn't identify what brand these rabbis were by their position on evil. One rabbi said, you know, nothing God creates is evil because God is good and God is perfect, and so when evil is done, it's because we just haven't had enough therapy. We take these perfectly good impulses and these precious gifts that God, creation, gives us, and we misuse them. And if only we could overcome some of our defects, we could channel them into good and productive avenues. The precious gift of sexuality is beautiful and perfect, but we mess it up with our carnal instincts that are unchecked by reason and by good therapy. Strangely, I found that came from the Orthodox rabbi. The Reform rabbi said, well, nothing God creates is evil because God only creates good, and basically we just can't understand what evil is because we're just little tiny dumb things and the universe is too vast, so it might look like evil to you, it might feel like evil to me, but you can't know. That's basically the power trip that God puts on Job when Job gets finally impatient and gets up and says, I did everything right. I was doing great. Business was good. I had wives. I had flocks. I had kine, and I have no idea what kine are, but he had lots of them, and all of a sudden they got taken away, and you're doing this to me, and I stood in line. I played by the rules, and why are you doing this to me? And God said, in that irrational and male way that God had back then,
how could you possibly understand? Where were you when I created out of the whirlwind?
Objection, Your Honor, non-responsive. It's also the response that God gives to Moses when Moses says, all right, you know, you think I'm going to listen to any bush in the desert? Don't go there. And incidentally, if you don't believe that this government follows the Dow with unusual amount of care, you don't understand the Dow Jones. So Moses says, you know, prove yourself, God. And God says, you know, the Jack Nicholson thing, you can't handle the truth. That's one of the orthodox religious explanations of evil. We just don't understand. It's good. It's for the greater good. Don't even try to understand it. The conservative rabbi, who is one of the great rabbi of in Southern California, I believe, of his generation, gave to me a very perplexing response. Part of it is exactly where I am, and part of it is so distant from my understanding of the problems of good and evil that, following the advice, I had to go back and rethink my own position carefully. He said, well, you know, evil that human beings do is evil, and that doesn't come from God. He said that those terrible things that we do to each other may or may not be amenable to therapy, but we have freedom and the ability to choose between life and death, right and wrong, good and evil. But, he said, the natural world, which is a divine creation, can be evil. He said the earthquake is evil. The earthquake that kills hundreds or thousands of people, that is evil. That cancer in a child of 2, of 3, of 4, of 5, that isn't coming from the effluence or pollution of the environment, but is spontaneously occurring, that he's willing to put on God. If the sun novas, that is somehow for him has moral agency. And I have to tell you, I don't understand that. And maybe you'll help me with this during the talk back. It seems to me that evil is several things, but all of the time it involves people making moral or immoral choices. People who are competent to make moral or immoral choices. In the Genesis myth, the story in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve are free, and they're cavorting, and they're having a wonderful time, and then they eat the fruit. And you would have thought it was good for you and a good source of fiber and nutrition, but apparently there was a problem with that. And all of a sudden they understand that they're naked, and they hide out, and God gets really upset, and they're punished. As I've mentioned before, Carl Sagan sees this as the story of childhood and the acquisition of moral agency, of becoming a moral player in the world. When we are children, we are not moral agents. We are shamelessly naked. We are do not work by the sweat of our brow. We do not have a sense of our own mortality. But then as we grow, we leave the garden and we become players, where we are responsible for what we've done. If a four-year-old pushes his little brother off the step, it's bad and it's wrong, but it isn't necessarily an evil act. If a 14-year-old pushes his brother out the window of the fifth floor, it is an evil act, because he understands the consequences, presumably, in the absence of any other physical or mental defect, and it has great and serious ramifications. I don't think the earthquake does. I don't think that natural phenomena are amenable to moral analysis, that the universe, for me, is amoral. But human beings are moral agents. We talk about somebody having the morals of an alley cat, but we don't talk about an alley cat having the morals of an alley cat. because alley cats are not moral agents. They act according to what they are and not by choice. We have choice, or at least sometimes the illusion of choice, and that's what creates agency. There are distinctions I'd like to make between sin and wrong and evil. It's wrong is, for example, the American general yesterday looked at the pictures of Iraqi prisoners being humiliated and at least emotionally tortured and said, you know, it doesn't really take very much to know that this is wrong. It's clear, prima facie, wrong. Is it evil? If it were a policy, it would clearly be evil as a policy. The acts of individuals in heat and in passion, that fuzzies the line a little bit. A little bit. The acts are clearly wrong. I have a good friend who was in Vietnam and spoke of unspeakable things. Things that he did that were, by my standards, horrendous and horrific acts. Had they been policy, they would have clearly been evil. In passion and in fear, they might be illegal, they might be war crimes, but I'm making some slight distinction. And it's a fuzzy one, I'll admit that. Then there's sin. Sin, classically, has been, the word in Hebrew is achet. It means literally missing the target. It's when we want to do something, we know who we are, we know what our values are, and we fail, as inevitably we do from time to time, and we just miss the target, sometimes by a little bit and sometimes by a mile. But at least we know what our values are. I'm inclined to think that evil, one of the signs of evil, is just having the wrong target. It's not missing it. It's aiming for something that is unworthy as an ambition for human beings to have. Exterminations, genocides are, I am willing to say, more than simply sins. They are wrong and they, for me, are evils as policies. And that we market them because very few people get up in the morning and say, I'm going to do evil. Most of the evil that is done in the world is done by people absolutely convinced, because they're uncoachable and unwilling to admit to a moment's hesitation or correction or self-correction, but I'm not referring to anyone specifically. It's done by people who are absolutely convinced that they are doing good, that they are doing God's work. Very few people get up and say, I think I'm going to be really satanic, you know, unless they're, I don't want to insult any of the 12-year-old. I don't want to insult any, how old are you now? Oh, thank God. I don't want to insult any of the 12-year-olds. 13 already? Okay. Any of the, oh God, I was feeling so young and springy too. But very few people are really satanic in their own thoughts. It is in the inability to be corrected, to see the humanity in the other, that they lose sight of what targets are worthy of our ambition. Sincerity is not a good check against evil. I am absolutely convinced that John Wilkes Booth to Sirhan Sirhan believed that they were doing good. That when we hear about ethnic cleansing, well, what a wonderful marketing term that is. Cleansing makes things clean again. The people get upset, well, we must be getting rid of those vermin, that infestation, those things that are less than we are. I think that's where we bring evil into the world. When we start seeing people as things, as objects to be used, to be misused, to be consumed, then we create the possibilities individually, not simply of doing wrong, not simply of sin in the ordinary sense of it, but of having policies and actions that are so gross and vile and dehumanizing that they become something that is evil. Now, the Orthodox religious have a lot of problems with this because, one, why is there evil in the world? And if God can't do anything about it, then God's not all-powerful. And if God won't do anything about it, then God's not all-good. And so they create all of these agency issues where Satan, the devil, is God's employee. And they try to get away from dualism or else we would all end up being Zoroastrians, with the forces of good and the forces of evil in eternal conflict, well, semi-eternal conflict. And that dualism is kind of the hidden secret sitting in most Western monotheistic systems, because what do you do with that problem of evil? Well, the liberal response isn't necessarily much better or much more sensible in some ways, because the liberal response, the humanist response, is closer to the, well, you can't possibly understand, and bad therapy and a little Prozac and everybody would be fine. Because human beings are good. And evil is just this concept that has absolutism to it. And we don't want to think of ourselves as imperfect creatures. It is not accidental that in your hymnal, it's completely accidental if you believe in accidents, that Judy chose Amazing Grace today. It's one of my favorites, you know, and like so many hymns, it's really terrific until you really examine the words, and then Unitarians start lip-syncing because we have problems with that saved a wretch like me. I'm not a wretch. I am the very pinnacle of God's creation. How could I say wretch? How could I say saved? Because people are good. And when bad things happen, it is with a Socratic position that, well, we just don't understand what's truly good. It's all been a terrible misunderstanding, or we had a bad childhood, or there's some kind of diminished capacity because we had bad teachers or parents or some other physical defect. The problem with evil on the right is theological, and the problem with evil on the left is pathological. We want to define it as illness. And in a sense, I think where there's some common ground to be found is whatever our theological positions or non-positions might be, we have to act as if we were morally responsible. Not simply go off on our instincts, not simply go off because we feel something passionately and no matter what anybody says, we're going to stick to our, sometimes literally, guns. I think there are times that we have to step away from cultural understanding and moral relativism and say, you know, the slaughter of the Armenians was evil. The Holocaust was evil. The extermination of leftists in Indonesia was evil. The extermination of people because of their color, their race, their politics, their religion is so far beyond simply wrong that we're willing to just say it is super wrong. Whether theologically or psychologically, whatever the explanation is, if we can't say that some things are just not fit for human beings to do to human beings, I think we go back to the pre-Apple days in the garden and we cease our responsibility to be moral agents in the world. There's another kind. The sins of commission are pretty easy in some ways to look at. But what about the sins of omission? I don't think the earthquake is evil. I don't think that the AIDS virus is evil. It's a virus. It is what it is. I think the failure of society to engage in its ramifications, the silence, the lack of involvement in the world, that sometimes is evil. Blake said that all that is needed for the triumph of evil is that a few good men, and I'll add women, remain silent. And so sometimes silence, a non-act, non-involvement, can be, in my view, something that allows evil to be in the world and to affect the world. Whether the label is used or not, it seems to me that the heart of the issue is that in the absence of gross pathologies and defects, most human beings are moral agents and responsible for our acts. In the absence of damage and dementia, most human beings have to be treated as if we bear responsibility for what we do and what we choose. And that is the good news and the bad news all at the same time. Because the very heart of my religious view is that what we do and what we choose, despite all appearances to the contrary, as individuals, makes a difference in a moral universe. Abstractions are fun to debate, but every day we are confronted with questions of life and death that we may choose by our gifts and our talents to choose life, to choose a larger embrace and a clearer sense of the common humanity that we share with each other and our own responsibility to be moral agents in this world and to accept gratefully our ability to make important choices for ourselves, for our families, and for our world.